May 12, 2016.
Hello?
Peer review meeting.
We'll give folks a minute. We've got all the St. John's folks here. Hopefully we'll hear a bunch of beeps.
Oh, yeah, I'm hitting beeps.
Yeah, I think we need to mention that. Yes, good point.
Sounds like lots of folks are joining us.
Good afternoon, Mr. Patrick.
Hey, Patrick. We'll get started in a second. I'm just giving folks a minute to join us.
Okay.
Sounded like someone in a submarine joined us.
I just need
You should let them know when you start that the meeting's being recorded.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you do roll call?
I was going to.
Do you do summary?
It'd be nice to know who was on.
I was going to ask.
Okay.
Hello?
Hi.
Oh,
we're here.
Okay.
I'm going to get started soon.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you. Okay. Here, Jim. Okay. Okay.
And that's not a lot. I mean, that there's not a webinar or anything. So
that's just to...
That's for our own.
Okay. Gotcha.
That's Shaw's model report, in case someone has a question.
Gotcha.
I'm not familiar with the protocol. Do we introduce ourselves?
Well, we'll get started in a second. I was just letting folks join. This is Andrew, St. John's. I guess I'll go ahead and get started.
Hey, Andrew. This is Sam.
Hey, Sam. I'll go ahead and get started. I don't know the best way because people are going to continue to join us. But just so that everyone knows, we're recording this teleconference. Just wanted to put that out there. And if we hear a bunch more people joining, I'll restate that. But so welcome, everybody. This is Andrew Sutherland with St. John's River Water Management District. I'm in the MFL program in the Bureau of Resource Management and Modeling. We've also got Dr. Sunny Hall, Xiaoxing Wang, and Joanne Chamberlain in the same bureau, the Resource Evaluation and Modeling. And we have with us Tom Maton and Karen Ferguson in our Office of General Counsel. So before we go further, if we could do a bit of a roll call just to see who's out there. I know that folks may end up talking over each other, but I just wanted to know. First of all, do we have the four peer review panelists? We heard from Sam, and I think I heard Patrick.
Lee is here.
Okay, we got Lee.
And Tony's here.
And hey, we got Tony. Okay, who else do we have again other than the peer reviewers?
You have Rod Gento.
Okay.
Skip Burner.
Okay.
David Meitinger.
If you guys could say who you're with, that would be...
I'm with my call.
Jim Hawley. Friends of Lake Apopka.
We are recording this, so I guess I don't need to write it all down. Okay.
Who's the last one?
Keith Browning and Debbie Bradshaw, are you seeing?
Okay, great. Anybody else?
Rob Dennis. Hey, Andrew, it's Rob Dennis, Lake Solutions Group.
Hey, Rob.
Alyssa, Hotel City of Winter Garden.
George McMahon
with
Arcadis for OUC.
Okay, great.
All right. I'm Raleigh Fulton.
Oh, good. Hey, Raleigh. All right. So I think that's everybody. So thank you guys, everybody, for joining us. The purpose of today's teleconference, as I'm sure we all know, is to take the next step in the Upper Ocklawaha River Basin Lakes MFL HSPF model peer review. Specifically, we're having this teleconference to discuss the sensitivity analysis that Shaw completed for the model. This, again, is the analysis that was recommended at the first workshop that was held this past February in Maitland. So again, welcome to you all. Thank you for your interest and participation in this effort and in this teleconference. The agenda for today is as follows, and hopefully, and if everyone could mute their phones, we're getting a bit of feedback. That would be good, unless you've got a comment, but if you don't, if you're just listening, if you could mute. So first, Shaw's going to review his sensitivity analysis, focusing on the significant issues, those tests that proved to be the most significant parameters. And then next, the peer review panel is going to have a bit of time to discuss amongst themselves what they think the most significant issues are. And our panel chair, Lee Wilson, who's with us, will lead that discussion. We discussed the idea of talking about the most significant parameter first and then going from there. After the panel has had time for their discussion amongst themselves and any time they need to discuss and ask questions with Shaw, we'll have time for stakeholder input. We've already received some questions from some stakeholders, and we can review those and any others that people have on the phone. So the main point is that at the end of today, the end product we'd like to come away with is a list of remaining issues and questions regarding the sensitivity analysis. There is going to be a time in the near future when we can get back into other issues with the calibration model and the baseline period. And I sent everybody, I know it was just this morning, but everyone should have received a revised tentative schedule for moving forward with the model peer review. I sent that to everyone along with an agenda. They were sent at separate times, but earlier today I sent the agenda, and then just a little while ago before lunch I sent the revised schedule. So hopefully everyone has that. I have had a few people that email has ended up in their junk mail, so check that if you don't have it. So let's see. So basically, we're going to be trying to come up with that list of final issues and questions that Shaw is going to address. I'll go through the schedule and show that we've left time for him to address the questions that were raised at the first workshop, as well as the list of questions that will come from this teleconference. He'll have time to address all those. Actually, he's taking a bit of a vacation to head to China, but when he gets back in sort of mid-June, he'll be addressing all of these. I'm going to be putting together that comprehensive list and get it out to all the stakeholders so people can comment on that, so that he has a final comprehensive list for the calibration model. And then the second workshop will be addressing those issues. So without any more discussion from me, I'm going to turn it over to Shaw. He'll briefly review his sensitivity analysis, and then we're going to turn it over to Lee Wilson. Thanks.
Okay. I'll just give a brief introduction about the sensitivity report. I think maybe all of you have the chance to read my sensitivity report. So first of all, I think we'll be on the last workshop, the peer review panel recommend 6 variables listed in table 1. So this is the 6 variables I'm testing on. The methodology is basically for the first 5 variables is be performed on the calibration model that run from 1995 to 2006. And the last variable, which is pumping from the North Shore restoration area, is performed on the baseline model. The model itself, the baseline actually runs from 1964 all the way to 2011, but data report is still same range, 1995 to 2006. The reason why the last one is performed on the baseline model instead of calibration model, because the pumpage is actually a nanometer tool in the North Shore restoration area. So that is the reason why. Also, another thing I want to point out, when performing the sensitivity analysis for each of these sensitivities is started separate from the other sensitivities, and when I for example, for the pore surface, upper foramen aquifer pore surface, when doing that, this is being performed across the whole basins. So that means starting from Lake Hawke Basin all the way to Lake Griffin, all of this will be reduced by 1 foot or increased by 1 foot. And when I'm doing that study, I only change that parameters. So for that sensitivity, let's take the overflow aquifer power surge, for example. If I'm doing that sensitivity analysis, I'm going to only change. It's only the power surge will be reduced by 1 foot or increased by 1 foot. And all of the other parameters, all input data are maintained exact same as the calibration model or baseline model. So this is, in this case, we can keep it as simple as possible. Only look at this sensitivity on this parameter of variables. And I will jump to the conclusion part. Basically, the model is very sensitive to the rainfall. By reducing or increase 10% of rainfall. That's the largest sensitivity factors. If you look at the page 15 of the sensitivity report, if you look at Lake Hawke, it's very obvious that during the drought or when the lake stage is very low. And specifically, you can look when the rainfall was reduced by 10%, it's bringing down the lake, especially during the drought from 2001 to 2003. And it goes to the next page, 16, Lake Dora, Lake Harris, and then next page, Lake Eustis, Lake Griffin. All of them have a quite sensible to that 10% reduction in the rainfall or 10% increase in the rainfall.
We're getting a lot of feedback. Could someone, whoever doesn't have their phone muted, could you please mute it unless you have a question?
I think the most important thing, I thought about why during the drought, the reduction of 10% or increasing 10% is sensitive. I think it's really during these stages, the lake level is quite low, that has a minimal flow. So that's, I think when there was enough storm, it will bring up the next stages and the change will be smaller. And the second variable that's model sensitive is the part surface. Reducing by 1 foot or increase by 1 foot. Especially for the Lake Hawke and Lake Griffin. So if you look at page 4, Lake Hawke, the graph showing the Lake Hawke responding to the part surface reduced by 1 foot or increased by 1 foot. And the Lake Dora is not significant change as Lake Hawke. Same thing the Lake Harris, Lake Eustis. And the Lake Griffin has quite a bit different, especially during that drought from 2000 to 2002. The reason why is that specifically for Lake Hawke and Lake Griffin, I think I gave a thought. If you look at page 3 on table 2, calibrated K values, K prime values in the model. So basically, if you look at the Lake Hawke and Lake Griffin, they actually have a large K values compared with the other lakes. So basically, reduced by 1 foot. So how this model works is that if you look at the page, equation 2 on the page 3, how I calculate the seepage from lake bottom is the K prime value times the height difference between the lake stages and the power surface. So basically, if you have 1 foot difference times the K prime, the table 2, that's going to be the seepage rate from Lake Bottom. So Lake Ahoka, for example, have 7.37, so about 7.4 cubic feet per second if for 1 foot of reduction in the power surface. And Lake Griffin is 7.318. So for 1 foot of reduction, we'll have the 1 foot of 7.3 cubic feet per second seepage loss from the lake bottoms. Another reason why these two lakes are sensitive to the power surface reduction of an increase by 1 foot is Lake Ahoka and Lake Griffin. Both of these lakes are the dual seepage lake. Basically, it can be a recharge lake or it also can be a discharge lake. So reducing by 1 foot or increase by 1 foot is also going to be making a change, shifting from lake from discharge lake to the recharge lake. So I think that's another possibility. I think that's the two reasons I can think about. It's possible. Why this two lake is more sensitive to the power surface declining or increase. The third variable that the model sensitive is runoff. If we look at the page, page 11. So from Lake Ahoka to Lake Dora and Lake Harris, Lake Eustis, all the way to Lake Griffin, I think we will have some, especially during drought. I think all of this, you can see most of this are during drought condition, like from 2000 to 2002. That is the time when the model sensitive. For the remaining three variables, like Lake Bottom seepage, Lake, the rating curve discharge, and the pumping from North Shore duration, the model respond but not as significant as the three variables I just mentioned. I think that is my conclusion from here. So I will give to.
Okay. Great. That was succinct, which is good because it leaves a lot of time for the panel to discuss. So with that, Lee, I'm going to turn it over to you and then, you know, for you guys to discuss and bring in Shaw when and as needed. So the floor is yours, Lee. Thanks.
Okay. I'd like to go back to page 15, which is where Shaw started. And there's all five lakes have a kind of a similar pattern. The discrepancies are, the issues are primarily in the drought period and the recovery from the drought. The differences are pretty substantial. At the maximum in 2003, for example, there are times when we have almost 3 feet of difference between the plus 10% and the minus 10%. And then the other thing that's kind of interesting is that the calibration and plus 10% catch up to one another in 2004, and the rain minus 10% does not. So my question to the panel is this is a pretty big deal numerically. What do we do with it? What's the significance to setting the MFL? We know that, I mean, if you recall, as I recall, Shaw can correct me if I'm wrong, we have three rainfall stations that are fairly widely spread apart. There's probably a lot of the sense in which the rainfall that we're comparing to is got a lot of variability in it and uncertainty to it. Can we use the model, or what do we do with the fact that that we have this large difference depending on variations in rainfall? Sam, do you want to start?
I do. I just punched my unmute button here. I think a couple of things are evident here. One, of course, is that Shaw varied the rainfall without changing anything else. And, you know, we know that the pot surface is going to respond to differences in recharge rates. And, you know, a lot of the parameters that are in the model should also be responding in some way to a change in rainfall. And I think what we need to do is be sure that they are responding so that, you know, if we miss the actual rainfall estimate that we put into the model, that, you know, it's actually a mistaken rainfall and not just the fact that we held the rainfall constant, or rather everything else constant, and just changed the rainfall. The other point is that I don't think this isn't a big surprise to me, because I think all of us would have said that those lakes are particularly Apopka, to a large extent, significantly influenced by rainfall. I think what we need to do is one, incorporate this sensitivity analysis into the report, and two, develop a discussion about what this sensitivity to rainfall means in terms of accuracy and whether or not the model is compensating for it by changing the other state variables that are in there, like recharge and pot surface. So it doesn't bother me that we have a divergence of 3 feet or 6 feet, depending on how you look at it, so much as it bothers me that we need to be sure that the model is responding to those changes appropriately. If they are, then those differences should be minimal rather than 3 feet or so. If they're not, and that 3 feet carries forward, then we've got problems.
Let me ask a question to Shaw. When you change the rainfall, do you see a response in the water level in the aquifer?
Well, first of all, you have to think about this model does not model in the upper aquifer. This is the upper aquifer is actually as an input variable to the model, to the hydrological model. So that's
right. So as I look at the graph on page 4, the effect of lowering, the effect of the changing the surface, the water level, we would assume that the water level would decline in the drought, and that would increase the seepage rate. So I guess my expectation is that if we did some sort of multiple factor run, we'd get an even larger discrepancy. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I agree with you, but like I point out in the because this sensitivity analysis is really just focused on that sensible one. There was maybe a lot of this variable can be correlated. You change one, maybe you have to change another one. So this can make it very complicated. So it's
right. So I guess before we go, I want to come back to some of the stuff that I agree with Sam. We should certainly incorporate this into the report. I want to get this discussion to do something at a more fundamental level of what it tells us about setting an MFL. Does somebody else on the panel want to chime in?
Yes, this is Patrick Harris. I wanted to point out that the model sensitivity is temporally dependent as well. Looking at most of these graphs, the sensitivity, the model reacts almost insignificantly during most of the period when the lakes are at their average pool, and most of the sensitivity to some of these parameter perturbations is during that extreme drought, 2000, 2001, 2. So the sensitivity, the parameter sensitivity changes depending on what regime you are in, relative to, normal pool versus drought. That's kind of an important feature to point out.
Wouldn't you think, though, that given that we're ultimately going to set MFLs using this model, that those drought values are maybe even more important? This just emphasizes how important handling the drought correctly is.
Yeah, and the sensitivity analysis doesn't really address the model performance. It's just which parameters might be something to look at if you wanted to do additional calibration, or which parameters become significant during those periods when you are having departures.
This is Sam. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Pat.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that figure 16, the Apopka graph, Lee pointed out something that's really, I think, instructive, that during the drought, the plus and minus figures separate from the calibration curve, in the right direction and so on. But then
exactly,
as the drought was ending, the calibration model and the plus 10% converge a year before the minus 10% converges with the calibration curve. That
right.
Tells me that something's going on there that's not rainfall. There's a parameter in there. That's why I said that we need to check the sheet to see if everything is responding as we think it should, because there's something going on that the calibration model can handle the increase in rainfall, but it's not handling the decrease in rainfall well.
I don't agree with that. I think there's a lot of processes going on in this model. And, I mean, think of it this way. If you have a bucket that is full and you add more water, are you making it more full? No, it's already full. And I think that's what you're looking at is, rainfall during this whole time period was perturbed up by 10% and down by 10%. And during most of this time period, from 95 all the way up to 2000, you saw very little impact. That means that the lakes are already full. They're already full. They're already discharging over the weirs. Mm-hmm. Adding more rainfall doesn't do anything. And that's perfectly, physically based. That's fine. Now, when it goes in this extreme drought, now when we add more water, more rainfall, you do see that you are above the calibration line, and that makes sense too. And you recover faster. But once you do recover, again, you're at this full condition, and the lakes, like I said, adding more water, you can't add any more than once the lakes are full.
I totally agree with that analysis. That's exactly how I see it. And I would say not. I wouldn't say that the model is not performing well in the drought. I'm telling us that the model in this drought condition is very sensitive to our assumptions about rainfall.
This is
Tony. I just want to another way of expressing what Patrick's saying. I think is that the model response depends a great deal on initial conditions. And so in your analogy, Patrick, it's different if you start with a full bucket as opposed to one that's half full. And the response time in particular is something that's going to vary significantly depend upon those initial conditions. And Is it okay to talk about some of the other analyses?
Sure.
Because, you know, I'm quite honest.
Let me just say that I do want to come back ultimately to the question of what do we do about this, okay?
Yeah, I think that's the case for all these things. But, you know, in doing this sort of thing, I always have in mind, what's the uncertainty in the actual measurements of these parameters that we're putting into a model? And, you know, plus or minus 10% to me isn't very large. And maybe that's why we don't see much of a response to those pluses and minuses for the other variables that were evaluated. And you could incorrectly conclude that the model is insensitive to those. And I'm not sure if that's a valid conclusion. So anyway, I wanted to speak to the other ones besides rainfall. Going back to the thing about initial conditions, it would be interesting to see how the model responded with different initial conditions. Because I think when going to your point, Lee, about how do we use this, one of the important things in how we use this, I think, is going to be the response time, you know, following an extended drought. How soon do we expect the lake to respond? And respond to a level that's desirable.
Well, I what I get from these graphs is that the responses are very similar. I mean, I do think we have a bimodal system. We have a full system in which when we make changes, it really doesn't matter because water's just flowing from one lake to the other. And when the lakes are stopped, the lower discharges and the local water budget takes over. But the curves are, except for this thing at the end, are pretty similar. The lake is responding very similarly, very quickly. You could do a correlation between the slopes of the lines, and it'd be pretty good.
What bothers me about that rainfall one, though, is I agree completely with Patrick's argument. I don't have any problem with that. But the low rainfall, actually the difference between the calibration curve and the minus 10% is greater a year and a half, 2 years later than it is during the drought.
Yep.
And the recovery is much slower in the 10% less rainfall, which you would expect. But I'm just wondering why that difference increased so much.
Well, I think
should we chime in or have Shaw chime in if he's got, like, as you're asking questions, or are we just gonna, or what's the best way, Lee? Do you think to, because he.
Well, we're welcome. You guys are welcome to chime in. I'm pretty happy right now with the four of us chewing it over.
Okay. Go ahead, Shaw.
Okay. I'd like to point out, this 10% reduction seems not big, but in this simulation, it's accumulative. It's basically every year, it's 10%.
Yeah.
But in reality, for the measurement, this is different from the measurement, because when you have measurement, you will have some year maybe 10% less, but the other year maybe 10% more, so you offset each other. But in this case, in this sensitivity analysis, 10% accumulative. So if you look at the 12 years by 10%, 50% average, 50 inches of rainfall as average, so that 12 years, 10% will be like a 60 inches difference. Mm-hmm. Particularly, you're talking about in the 2004, the Lake Apopka stage. The reason why was that the big difference is really, I think, when the lake was coming up, but that 10%, it's just not reduction, it's not bringing up the lake to the level of the calibration. And then the second drop strikes that make bring down the lake again. I think that's the reason why. That's why the model responds like that.
Well, I mean, one thing that has to happen, if you look at the green line, the plus 10%, it caps out, so it's going to flatten, which means the calibration is going to catch up to it.
Right.
Yeah, it's just physics.
But
the notion that a dry condition will respond slower doesn't bother me at all. I come back to, and I want to get, before we leave this, we really have to discuss, so what are we going to do with this? This tells me that when we apply this model to setting MFLs for these lakes, and it's all of them, that we have a assumption built into our modeling about precipitation, and that's one of the things that could really change in the future, by the way, under various climatic scenarios, and it makes a big difference what we expect lake levels to be, what our model is going to show lake levels to be, depending on whether we mess with rainfall at all. And I'm not sure we want to mess with it. Maybe we just record it and acknowledge it and somehow build it into our adaptive management concepts that I think are going to be pretty critical.
I think
that's my concern. My concern is we have found something that's important. We found something that I consider one of our least, Shaw's point is it's a big number. It's one of the least constrained numbers in our entire analysis. We've got three weather stations. And I think we have to acknowledge that there's a lot of uncertainty in our model results because of this. So what do we do?
Doesn't it say that rainfall is a driver of these systems?
Absolutely.
So I guess when you say sensitivity of the model, I think the model is predicting similar results as we would expect with either an increase or a decrease of rainfall. But the concern being that we realize these systems are very much driven by rainfall. So it's not, to me, it's not the sensitivity of the, actually the model is sensitive and is able to show that variation as we would anticipate. Reasonably, yeah, but that's not saying that the model is uncertain.
To your point, though, Lee, about the MFL and setting it based on previous, I think is your point, setting it on a previous climatic condition and we don't know what the future holds. I think that because we're going to, I mean, in terms of adaptive management, the idea is to come back to these at an interval. Often 5 years is an interval that's discussed in terms of not a full-blown reevaluation, but reevaluating the data if we see that, you know, that's sort of the way these are adaptively managed, is to come back to them and see what the data have been in the last 5 years. Because as Sonny has often said, our best guess at the patterns of the climate in the future are what has already occurred. And it's true that that may change, but the only way we're going to be able to address that is through sort of a reevaluation process at some interval. So I think that's our
That part is fine, Andrew. There's another consideration, though, which I guess I glossed over a little bit, which is we have, I would consider a very not robust input to this model, which is data from three weather stations in a very, very large area.
Okay.
And there are error bars even around the data from each of those stations. So I guess I'm concerned to the extent that the rainfall inputs that we are using are not necessarily, how confident are we that when we put in the data for these three rainfall stations, we've captured the hydrology of the system historically?
Okay. I see your, I missed that. I'm sorry. I see your point. I think maybe Shaw can speak to that, certainly better than me, but.
Yeah, understand me. I think that we are limited with the data what we have. We only have three long-term gauges. That's all we have. I mean, I cannot create data from nothing. So that's what I can do as a modeler. Based on the model.
Yeah, I'm not criticizing you for that. In setting an MFL, we have some. Well, I mean, one of the whole points of this analysis is how much do we care? How important is it to us that you didn't have a better rainfall data set? It turns out to be, could be important. I guess what you're saying, Andrew, is you're just advising us. I hear from you, and I'd like to hear from the other peer reviewers. You're telling us this doesn't really say forget the don't do anything with the calibration model. We can live with the calibration model. We just have to make sure our adaptive management program is functional.
I'm not sure that's exactly what I was saying, but
I'm translating it. I'm trying to make it operational as it applies to what we do with the figure.
Yeah, I was just trying to make a comment on the lack of understanding of future climate. As far as whether there are other issues with the calibration model, I wasn't commenting on that. But and certainly these rainfall gauges.
How about
gauges,
my group?
Yes.
How about Sam and Patrick and Tony? Do you think that this requires us to do anything different other than documentation, as Sam indicated, anything different in proceeding with the MFL's analysis?
This is Sam. I don't think it does require us doing anything else, but I think that in the report that ultimately comes from the model, that I like Shaw's explanation about the lag in cumulative rainfall and things like that. That needs to be explained in the report. And we also need to make a very firm recommendation for the adaptive management approach because, as Andrew says, we can't predict the rainfall in the future. And during drought, it's pretty clear that our ability to predict what's happening may be compromised a little bit because of the nature of the rainfall data. I have no problem with looking at the pre-2000 or pre-99 model results and saying that the model can be used to estimate what the effects of withdrawals would be and so on under those conditions. It's just during a natural drought that we sort of lose our ability to do that, and we don't lose our ability, but we lose our certainty as a result of the sensitivity to the drought and recovery time. So I just think that's got to all be laid out, and it make it very apparent to everybody that here are the strengths of the model and here are the problems that the model suggests. And then you go forward.
Patrick?
The model eventually will be used, in a comparative sense. What if we do the management? What if we add more pumping? What if we, withdraw more water, control the lake, set it at, different operation schedule. So at that point, you're playing what-if games. So as far as evaluating the model performance, it goes back to the calibration in the previous documentation on how well the model performed. This sensitivity just says that the model's very sensitive when there's a drought. And if there's any poor performance, specifically during drought period, that poor performance might be explained by having a poor understanding of rainfall. So as far as
go ahead.
I'm just saying, as far as the impact of this model or this sensitivity on developing the MFLs, I think it's going back to the previous calibration comparisons, is how well does the model perform, during these conditions?
I guess that was the question. I don't want to leave Tony out here, but when we finish this, I want to go back to Shaw and ask him about the calibration during the drought versus the calibration during this steady state condition. But Tony? You're on.
I had the mute on. I'm sorry. To go
going back to the question about should this necessitate any change in the model versus, you know, interpretation? I think it leans more toward interpretation. How we whatever inferences we're going to make with any of these model runs is to put this into that perspective. But I really do think that clearly that the model performance in these extreme conditions is something that definitely needs to be understood well.
Shad, do you remember from the calibration results is the calibration line? I think during those drought periods is the calibration as good then as it is during the high conditions?
Well, if you look at my model, if you guys have the report, my draft report, look at the page.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me.
Oh, okay.
It's 73.
What?
Yeah, page 73. You do have the report.
If you do have it, it's page 73.
Okay, I just need a qualitative answer. Darn, it looks good. Or, you know, it doesn't seem quite, it does seem to have lost a little traction there.
Yeah, the drought, it's at 2002, at the lowest point, it's actually performing very well. Like my former supervisor, Dan Smith, said he thinks this is the best calibration he has ever seen.
When you do get a chance, Lee, look at figure 27.
Okay.
27 during that low period is one of the tightest periods of the...
Okay.
Yes.
That's great to know.
Yeah, but in 2000...
So what I'm getting out of all of this, discussion is that we've identified some variations in the model. It's not a shock. We found that these primarily affect drought conditions, which is, again, not a surprise, and that we need to document it, we need to discuss it, but we can proceed with the model.
Yes.
I did look at page 73, Sean,
mm-hmm.
and I think maybe this doesn't answer the question maybe better. If we could plot out the difference between predict and observed, and look at that delta and plot that over time, that might tell us more about, you know, any bias due to, you know, differences in rainfall. The other way to do it would be to plot on the y-axis the difference between predicted and observed, and on the x-axis rainfall. And see, you know, how does rainfall affect the difference between predicted and observed?
Mm. Okay.
Why not do both?
Yeah. I think that might be because we're assuming that the low stages are at the lowest rainfall, and then but there are some other ones that I think this doesn't answer Lee's question entirely.
Okay.
I went to page 73, and that same recovery period is one of our poorest.
Mm. Yep.
But in 2004, I think you are right. But you look at in 2004, actually, in the calibration, the 2004 is doing better than in the sensitivity analysis. Yes. I agree with you. In 2003, yes. It's not, that 2003, I think it's not responding. Looks like the lake not responding quick enough. To the observed values. But in 2004,
there's no way that this information indicates to us that we need to change the model. That's my first conclusion. I mean, one of the reasons for doing this whole sensitivity test is what confidence do we have in the model and can we do better? And the first part of it is it generally gives us confidence. It gives us some concerns in the drought conditions, which we need to make a record of and discuss. But I don't see it that we would change the model in any way.
This is This is Sam. I agree with that. And like I said before, you know, from 1990, before 1999, and then during, I guess that's 2005, the model has pretty well converged. You know, the, we're not seeing evidence of any significant sensitivity at all. And that, if you make your MFL decisions and so on based on, quote, normal, unquote, rainfall, you're good.
Yeah, but we won't. I mean, the low MFLs are going to be drought-based.
Well, and we'll
try
to use...
they're based on...
Sorry.
Aren't they or are they not in this case?
Well, we're going to use what we think of as a representative period of record with highs and lows for, and then whatever our current withdrawal scenario is for our existing condition moving forward. So it would have, hopefully, both, you know, the more data that...
But your lows are going to be specific to the droughts. I mean, that's because clearly the system doesn't get low except in droughts.
They're going to be sensitive to it, but they're not a percentile base. They're, you know, they're elevations and they're but I'm not sure I understand you. I mean,
well, I guess it's more a question. It's more a question of when you run, you're going to set your MFL based on your vegetation transects, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
I mean, if we were set,
and so, but then you're going to say, what is the frequency with which I want this to be met?
Correct, but again,
and that's going to come out of your model.
Well, no, that's based on.
That's going to the operational conditions that achieve that frequency will come out of your model. This is what I have to. This is, I can't allow a depletion, or I can't allow a depletion based on the model tells me I will meet that target or not.
It'll tell you whether you're meeting it. Yes, and so it will be those lows that influence whether it's met. But it's not the lows that are set that are part of setting it.
Right.
Well.
Right.
Yeah.
This Sonny, keep in mind that this drought that he's modeling here, probably in that area of the state, was a 200 to 300 year returnable drought condition. It's very unusual, and it's really outside the normal operation of MFLs. MFLs would be dealing with more, you know, the way they're set, and they're not intended. We're not intending to. We can't safeguard against natural phenomena like this that are extremes. You know, and the lake's going to go down. But we're focusing on more of the normal ranges of the lake due to moderate drought, high, you know, moderate increases in rainfall. You see, you follow me? This is kind of outside.
I don't want to. You and I have had many discussions of this very topic.
Yes.
But I would say that we're using a fairly short period of record here, and this is a big part of it. So
yeah, I don't disagree.
Maybe you're saying it biases it. And so uncertainty in the bias is maybe not so critical. I don't have a problem with going forward. We just have to be really careful, I think, when we go forward and how we deal with this. Because we're going to end up setting something that says, and going forward we can allow new diversions and depletions because our model says it will meet the MFL.
But this is
and to the extent that the model is biased by an unusual drought, or to the extent that the model has uncertainty into it during a drought, we're going to have to be very careful about that.
It's worth pointing out that this is a big part of the calibration period, but his simulated period for the MFL, the existing condition that the MFL conditions compared to goes to what, 64 or something?
64, yeah.
Yeah, 64.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, which is much better.
Yeah.
And hopefully the calibration period captures the highs and lows that are also within that same range in the, you know, from 64 to 2014 or whatever.
I think it's important to keep in mind that this is an extreme event that's right in the middle of this calibration cycle.
Well, you and I, we've had many good discussions on this very subject. Don't have to have them again. Think stationarity, but okay, I'm ready. I guess have Sam, Patrick, Tony, are we ready for the citizen part, stakeholder part?
Hiya.
Um,
Let's see. Hang on a minute.
Once we get to the stakeholder part. Yeah.
We're there.
Sam's doing it.
I just want to take a quick look at the hot surface thing and be sure that I'm okay with that. Yeah, I'm okay with going on to the stakeholder.
I wanted to ask Tony, could you reiterate those two you were saying? I didn't get them both written down in terms of some additional graphing or analysis you wanted to look at. Rainfall versus the predicted to observed ratio. And then what was the other thing you said? Just looking at drought versus rainfall periods and doing predicted versus observed. Is that what you said? I didn't get that down.
Yeah. A time series plot. So on the x-axis, we'd have time, and on the y-axis, the difference between predicted and observed.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the other one was...
Just the residual plot.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Okay.
And what's the other one?
It do the same thing, the residual on the y, and on the x, rainfall.
Okay.
And, again... Leah said this, and Tony's saying it, I don't know, second it, that a third it, that you just simply have to take this uncertainty associated with the drought head on in the text and explain what the problem is, whatever you need to do, include Tony's graphs in there and talk about the... to the extent that you can at this stage, what the implications are in terms of management.
Okay. Okay.
Andrew, I'm going to let you take over the stakeholder part.
Sure. We heard from friends of Lake Apopka. Is Jim on the phone?
Hi. Yeah, right here. Thank you, Andy.
Yeah, and we... Shaw has reviewed what you sent us and has, I think, he can go through. I think he has some sort of answers, and then we can go from there. And then we can get to other folks who maybe haven't sent us anything but have other questions after that. Go ahead, Shaw. And I don't know that everyone out there has what Jim put together for us, but we can get that for whoever wants it. Sure. You just start at the beginning. He's just going to start at the beginning. Is that okay, Jim, or did you want to just focus on...
Yeah, did you want me to read them to you, or how do you want to handle it?
You can read them, and he can answer them, and focus on whichever ones you think are most important.
I'll try to go through them as quickly as I can.
Okay.
Just some general questions on the sensitivity test. Using a 12-year calibration time, to judge the sensitivity changes over 48 years might miss some important lake levels. Why wasn't the sensitivity run made over 48 years rather than just a shorter time?
Okay. Jim, this is Shaw. First of all, I would like to thank you for your effort. I can see you spent a lot of time looking at my report and the sensitivity report. I thank you for that. It's actually...
Well, I thank you for a good report, Shaw.
Your effort make us do the better job, so I really appreciate that. My response to your question is that, as you can see, I think why I'm using 12 years is really, first thing is the review panel directly doing on the calibration model. So that's the first reason. And the second reason, the calibration model is actually, it's a capture the highs and lows. As you can see on my sensitivity report, the time when the model is very sensitive is really during drought. And during the high, I think it's a very small difference.
Okay. The other point was maybe we should be looking at the changes versus the actual observed data rather than model data.
I think the reason why we using the model data is because in the observed data it's a lot less reflecting. It can be many changes, because observed data, like, for example, they can be like structure change, the operation by the structure opening and getting, they're not in a consistent way. And also, there was so many changes, mind management. in the Okinawa, specifically in the Lake Apopka watershed. From 1995, you know, from 1960, you know, whatever, you can see that. So it used to be agriculture. Agriculture, and then the district bought it, and the district, when the district restored, preparing for the restoration, and now the district in the mine at the wetland. So there are so many changes. You just couldn't use the observed value. Since the model data may be even better, it's in a consistent way we can be seen any difference.
Well, yes and no. I think that that although there were changes made during the time period, maybe we should have run the model out further into time, because some of the things you've been looking at aren't there anymore. I think checking against the observed would still be a good point. Now, I'll get to that later in this thing.
Can I add something? This is Sam.
Yeah, sure.
You know, don't forget that a sensitivity analysis is looking at the structure of the model, not the system we're modeling. So what we're really concerned about is how well does the mathematics of the model perform, not what the lake really did at any one point in time. That comes later.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, Sam.
You know, there was never any intent to look at how the sensitivity analysis actually reflects behavior of the lake. That's a different step.
Yeah, that's that baseline condition discussion that we're going to have next. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let me jump to the main point I wanted to make. I went to the NSA pump schedule. Okay? That's item 6 on this. Mm-hmm. And I have some trouble here. One thing is the area considered is only a small part of the North Shore properties. You only considered the Zellwood area, actually. You didn't consider Duda or the west side of the canal. And the baseline curve shown in figure 26 has a lower Lake Apopka stage than the calibration level, and it also has a much different one than the actual observed data. During those years, during 2003 and 2004, where it's really off quite a bit. In the sensitivity tests that were made, you for the first time put down what you thought the discharge would be from the, in this case, the Zellwood area. Put down, 5.7 cubic feet a second was used. The lower rate doesn't seem to be consistent with what was going on in 1995 through 2006. My data from the district shows that we were discharging quite a bit more, like 18 cubic feet a second off that area. How was this 5.7 cubic feet a second obtained? What was the water budget assumptions? And what were the discharge rates that you expect from Duda and from the 5,000 acres on the west side of the canal?
Okay. I think you're right. When doing the sensitivity analysis, I only look at North Shore, NSRA on the Zellwood. Basically, you need one pump and you need two pumps. That's the two pumps I vary by 1 foot. And for the waste, for the marsh flow as the wetland waste to the AB Canal, that was the district called marsh flow, that's a treatment wetland. So for that, it's modeled as a wetland just drains to the Lake Apopka. So what happens is that because, yeah, the water does, the district may treat the water from Lake Apopka, but it also pumps back to the Lake Apopka. So it's basically, I think the washed out, whatever comes in may come out. So that pump, I don't bother at all. It's to make it simple. It is just whatever it come out, it will come out. It does not go anywhere. And for the Duda, this is the Duda pump, but I look at that. Duda pump is, I think it's only around one surface. it's a much smaller value. I think because when I look at the table, it's actually I'm only change the pumps on the loss shock restoration area. I think that's the whole purpose while doing that. And regarding the question you're asking about why there was such a difference, we got new data we got from district. I think, like I said.
Okay, okay, I understand. That's what I'm asking about. What is that new data showing? Do you have a handle on that with a water budget?
No. This is based on the model. This is all the 5.7 is all come from the models. It's the basic. Okay, and all these pumps is based on the weighting criteria on the raw shore restoration area. So that 5.77 is really, like I said, in the sensitivity report, it's the unit 1 turns on with the water level as a 2 feet, and unit 2 as 3 feet, depth of water. So that's why it comes 5.7. This is way be different. I mean, understand, this will be quite different from what you have from the observed data. So this is the whole point. Why is that different? Because back the observed value you have, 95 to 2006, is totally different what we have now. Back that time, the district is preparing the restorations, and there was still some agriculture land. There was more pumpage to the lake. But now there's a wetland.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, but it's right. I understand what you're saying. But, okay, number one, you use the old data, though, in your model to decide, you know, your calibration model is based on what was happening earlier. They've just started going into this mode now where they're going to use it in a way, I'm not sure how, but they're going to be flooding it and to some level and then discharging. And I'm just wondering if the district has any information on how they got to this number. Is this number based on what is it based on?
Well, it's based on the well. He says it's based on the wetland criteria for unit 1 and 2, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what does that mean? Are you figuring that you're going to get runoff from the adjacent areas around wetland 1 and 2?
Unit the pump 1 and 2. It's whatever runoff is in his model, and then he's got a 2 foot and a 3 foot. Is it a 2 and a 3? Threshold. For the North Shore for those two pumps, and then you went, 1 foot lower?
1 foot lower. Basically, the 1 foot.
I'm not concerned with the 1 foot or 2 foot we're running on. What I'm concerned about is the baseline has changed, and we don't know how. You're saying the district has some information on this. I guess I can get it from them. Who's doing this work at the district?
Well, Jim, this baseline report is back in the draft report. If you go to the draft report of the model, it's one of the chapter at the draft report. It's not in the sensitivity, because this sensitivity analysis is based on, it's built on the model where we have reviewed. Yeah, so you have to go back to the, which one I say the chapter?
Yeah, I'm almost
This is in the big report, you say?
It's chapter 8, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, chapter 8
in the draft report.
What page is that?
89.
All right. Wait a minute.
And do you explain in there the wetland criteria and where that came from? I mean, that's essentially what he's asking, I think.
Yeah, because you've got to remember that you're setting a condition, and then you're saying this is the whole period of record, it was that way,
right?
The way it was operated. Jim, that's probably where you're getting hung up with this model. We've taken what the environmental sciences group has given us as their best projection of the way they want to operate the North Shore, and then show.
Yeah, I want to get to that too, because I think that is a big problem there.
Well, but again, that's
first of all, we got to know what we have in hand, and that's what I'm trying. Who at the environmental sciences should I talk to?
It's what Raleigh's on the phone. Raleigh's on the phone, and he can give us probably other than him. Who else?
I know Raleigh. I'll give him a call later. I don't want to take up all the time doing that. The other thing on this though is we should have more information on Duda and on that west part of that, where the flowway is, That's 5,000 acres over there. But let me just comment on the report. This goes back to the, let's see what section it is. Page 90. Where it shows the outline of the North Shore area, and it shows Duda and what used to be Zellwood. And the report states that the discharges from Duda and the North Shore will occur when needed. This type of discharge isn't going to do anything for Lake Apopka's restoration. When needed discharges are likely to occur when the areas are overfilled, you know, and they're experiencing a large storm, like during the hurricane season. And at that time, it's likely that Lake Apopka will also be discharged. And the 15,000 acres on the North Shore will also want to pump at that time. Now, with these areas, These areas on the North Shore are all below lake level. They all can tolerate a large range in water level. And we know Lake Apopka has lower phosphorus readings when we have higher water levels in the lake. But if we're going to be discharging all the water out when we have it, we're going to miss it when we need it, and it's not going to keep the lake stage up. So I don't understand this discharging when needed. Nobody in the whole chain of lakes discharges when needed. We have an upside-down situation. We discharge during the going into the summertime because we're worried about flooding. And that's the way the whole chain runs. And if Lake Apopka is ever to be helped, we should be looking how we can use some of that storage on the North Shore to help handle the large storms that come, and not be so limited in water in drought times. That's key to me, and I don't understand. I almost have to go back and think. You know, if you have a table in here showing how discharges would be made if we're above the regulation schedule. We have nothing showing how discharges will be made downstream if we're below the regulation schedule. Now, that's a problem, because if the downstream people want a lot of water, and when we're low, as I say, it's going to be very difficult to get low phosphorus readings in the lake water. Going back, I found a kind of a boo-boo here in your report. This is on page 21. Okay, 21. Yeah, it says in the middle of the, or at the end of the last paragraph, because of the regulation schedule, the lake fluctuates in a narrow range. It varies from 61.35 to 67.63, which is not a small range. It should be, those numbers should be corrected. They're 65.65, and the middle of the range is 66.15, and the 65.9 is the bottom. Oh, sorry, it's the top. So yes, that's right.
Jim, I'm sorry to.
I don't want to belabor this, but the point that I'm trying to make is.
Well, we do want to.
If you just, Andrew, just look at that curve of regulation schedule for Lake Apopka, okay?
I just want to make sure we get through the sensitivity analysis. I do agree that we need to talk in depth about the baseline condition, which is what you're talking about, and the regulation schedule, which will come after that. But I just.
Well, you're using this though in your scheme here. You're saying that we're going to get a five cubic feet a second out of the out of the North Shore area that was Elwood. And that's troubling to me because...
Okay, what's the curve you want us to look at? What's the curve that you were saying something
about? Well, I wanted you just look at in the big report.
Yep.
Page 22.
Okay, hold on a second.
The numbers mentioned there that I just read on from page 21 don't agree with that curve. Rather than belittle it.
With the regulation schedule curve, I mean? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's wrong.
Well, we can, yeah.
But my point is, just look at that figure for a minute. It says when we're above the regulation schedule, we're going to discharge. And later on, you tell us how much to discharge when we're above by various amounts. But when we're below the regulation schedule, we have a minimum flow. What is that minimum flow? I can tell you that the folks downstream want that minimum flow to be very, very high, I think. They want it to be equal to the Apopka Spring outflow. And we can't do that. We can't solve Lake Apopka's phosphorus problem unless we get this level up.
I think that I think this is very important. I just think that the better forum might be when we're talking about the baseline condition, the constraining MFL, and how does that affect total phosphorus. I think that's a good discussion. It's just and maybe Shaw can chime in on, I think he sort of tried to explain where the 5.7 CFS came from. If you need more detail about where that 5.3, what is it?
It's modeled.
Where that came from, I mean, it was modeled based on the, again, wetland criteria and the management of the North Shore area that we've gotten from ES staff. But as far as, you know, what is the effect of the constraining MFL on total phosphorus and what, you know, how that is affected by the baseline condition that we set, I agree those are important things to discuss. And
I
just think that
I see that, yes, and I take your, I will be hopefully coming to those meetings.
Yes.
I just also wonder, you know, this is supposed to be minimum flows and levels. We're not talking about flows and any of the stuff that's been done here very much. These controlled areas on the whole chain, really, are flows. And should, you know, when we talk about lakes, we normally don't talk about flows. We talk about levels. But, you know, for instance, on that chart on page 22, there is no maximum and minimum levels. We have a maximum and minimum level, by the way, for the regulation. It goes with the regulation schedule. And I'm beginning to wonder whether we shouldn't be considering flows in this MFL also, because they're so important, and it's very important to how we handle the water that we get. Okay, I'm done. Thanks.
If there is a level that's important to make sure that, you know, lake sediments aren't resuspended and you get total phosphorus in the water column and all the problems that causes, that's also a level issue. That is something, and if Raleigh's still on the phone, Raleigh, that is something that you looked at with the MFL and with the constraining MFL. But again, that discussion will be had at two times. One, when we talk about the baseline condition after we settle on the calibrated model, and then also when we have discussions on the MFL themselves and are they appropriate. Does the most constraining MFL actually protect the level needed to maintain a you know, appropriate, like 55 parts per billion TP? You know, that'll come with the MFL discussion.
Okay, well, thanks, Andrew. I appreciate it.
I guess maybe Raleigh's not on the phone. Okay, so I hope that we... And Jim, if you need, call either Shaw or myself, and we can get you more about why that CFS is 5.27 versus the period of record 18 CFS. We can have another discussion about that. Is there anybody else, any other stakeholders with comments or questions for the panel or for Shaw?
Yes, Andrew, this is Keith Browning with OUC.
Hey, Keith, go ahead.
We only have two questions. Start with the first one, and it's about the North Shore. And I guess I would like to see some sort of diagram, if I can, and it probably applies to all the the weather we're talking calibration, sensitivity, or whatever, I'd like to see a diagram of how Apopka's modeled, how that North Shore is modeled, you know, what's the drainage basin of that North Shore that's in the model. It sounds to me like it's almost modeled like its own separate little lake that pumped to Lake Apopka when the levels hit whatever control structure you guys set. That would be helpful for my understanding. I think it would help some of Jim's questions too as well, maybe.
It sure would. Thank you.
Is that different than...
Calibration is different, yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, sorry.
We can have that in layman's language rather than modeler and model variable language. That would be helpful. I'm sorry.
What? I think this is Debbie. You guys were looking at a figure that was pretty close earlier in the report where it showed flow in the North Shore and
figure 55.
I don't recall the number, but it gets us most of the way there. I guess just maybe marking it up to whether what pieces of it are in the model or not, and maybe that's what this is trying to show.
Just assumptions of how they're going to operate that.
Assumptions on how different flows or how different parts of the North Shore are operated, is that, or detail about? Just more, and you probably have all that. And Shaw has all that, so it's just a matter of putting it in a figure like 55 and making it more detailed, maybe.
Yeah, I think something that explains it, where you can see, okay, water that lands on this, then this part of the drainage basin is its own little bucket of water, and it's in there until the pumps pump it out. And then you get ET and rainfall and drainage and runoff, whatever, particularly in that basin. And then you have the rest of the basin that maybe runs off directly into the lake. I think that would be helpful. And then you might have a third one for the marsh flowway, depending how that operates. But I think that would be helpful for our understanding.
A water budget schematic for the North Shore and the marsh flowway.
Right, and how it relates to the lake. Because, for instance...
Yeah.
One of my questions, I thought I had heard when we did the tour of the treatment facility that there was water going from Lake Apopka to the North Shore area under some conditions, but the figure that we were looking at only showed arrows going from North Shore to the lake. So that's like one of my questions. Is there ever a condition where you're taking water from Lake Apopka and putting it into North Shore?
This is Shaw. I think you maybe means the Jones Avenue. If you look at my figure 55 on the draft report, or model draft report, on the top.
What page?
It's like 90 or so, or 91. 91. Yep.
Yeah, that's a good start there.
Yeah, if you look at the top, if there was two...
This is Jim again. Sorry. Where it says drains to Lake Apopka, that draining to Lake Apopka doesn't always happen. That area drains to the Apopka-Beauclair Canal. And it drains to Lake Apopka if two things are done. If the dam is closed and if the NERF is not operating. Now, the NERF operates, or that's part of what I was trying to get at. That NERF is operating right now, and we are now on Lake Apopka below our minimum desirable level, and they're taking out 20 cubic feet a second. And they're taking it out of alum-treated water, which would be nice to get back into Lake Apopka. I said my piece.
Okay. Jim, this is Shaw again, just to answer your question. Actually, in the AP Canal, it's modeled as part of Lake Apopka in my model. Okay, so it's the same. And also for the loaf, in the model is not separate. So it's basically the same, the whatever comes goes to the loaf will be the same from the, you know, lock and dam. I just modeled that way. I didn't separate the loaf as a separate discharge. The same discharge, if you look at discharge, the same thing from lock and dam.
I understand. It will go into Lake Apopka if the dam is closed and if the NERF is not operating. The NERF will be operating a lot of the time. So, any time, even when we get below our regulation schedule, it says minimum flows. I don't know what that means. What it means to the folks downstream is we want 20 or 25 or somewhere in the 20s. Yep. Cubic feet a second flowing through that lock and dam. Not lock and dam, through the NERF, excuse me, around the lock and dam.
I think a schematic that goes with lake area maps and wetland maps would help everybody be all talking about the same thing, because I'm not even following a lot of what Jim's saying. So I think it would help get us on the same page.
Okay.
Yep. Well, I was referring to that figure on 91 that shows the smaller pump, the 33 cubic feet a second pump from the NSRA.
I'd like to see how it all fits together in a model.
Yeah. Okay.
I'd like to move on to my next question.
Yeah.
When you did the sensitivity analysis from the North Shore, you only did one of lowering the pump level, trigger level by 1 foot. Why only lower it by 1 foot as opposed to raise it like you did both ways on the other variables? I think there was discussion. I just can't remember what the answer to that was.
Yeah, does the panel remember? I don't remember either, but maybe the panel does. Those were the parameters we came up with during that first workshop, and there was a discussion of that. I don't have my notes with me for that.
I think it was that it wasn't a situation that was going to be realistic, so we didn't care.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
That's what I recall.
Why is that? Because are we talking about discharges from the North Shore area?
I think the depth's too much.
Talking about the sensitivity run, how sensitive the model was to the level, the pumping level in the North Shore, and there was no concept that it was ever going to be higher, so
right.
We're only looking at lower.
Yeah.
It depends now. If the North Shore is operated in a way that, in a way where you control the water levels such that they are low in the summer and higher in the winter, like the rest of the lakes on the chain. If you do that, the North Shore would be a benefit to stopping a lot of heavy discharges from going downstream. And then they'd be in a position to reflow some of that water back into the Lake Apopka area when it got drier. So the whole concept of this being somehow, the water control systems on this lake are very important, and they're very important for Lake Apopka because we don't have the option, as Shaw pointed out in the report, we don't have the option that the downstream lakes have of being able to flow water out of them when they don't need it. We got to try to keep as much as we can. And so the control systems are very important to this.
The 2 and 3 foot thresholds that he used in the North Shore were based on recommendations from our ES staff, and that's what he used. So, but that discussion about North Shore management, regulation schedule management, and baseline condition, I think, is what we can get into with the next. And also, if you'll help us out, I mean, I know you've given us some great comments, Jim, but document further these comments, because part of what I want to do after today is pull together what are the remaining issues regarding just the calibration model for Shaw when he gets back from vacation mid-June. He'll have a certain period of time when I'm going to have this consolidated list of everything, all the issues and questions, and have everybody look at it, have the panel and stakeholders look at that list, that comprehensive list, and then we'll get that to Shaw to address before the second workshop. So send me...
I'll be glad to...
Yeah, send me anything else you want
I'll be glad to get you anything I can. I did wanted to mention, I guess, in there that somebody else brought up, did the rainfall changes include adjustments in things like the surface runoff or anything? But as Shaw pointed out, he didn't do that. He just did one thing at a time.
That's right.
Which is what he was asked to do. But maybe you know, on the aquifer one, the UFA, you might want to look at what the spring flow was. Did he vary the spring flow, because that's connected to the aquifer, and you might want to do that if it wasn't in that analysis.
No, for the
it was not, and that's part of your comment, and that'll be part of. I think the thing to do is he'll need to, with this comprehensive list, address each comment, and that's one of them, because that's already what you've given us as to why he did or did not, in sort of a resolution document, and that'll be forthcoming. He's going to have quite a long...
Andy, when did you say the baseline meeting would be?
Well, I can get into that now, unless we have other stakeholder.
Okay.
I've got a schedule that I sent everyone. Did you get that, Jim? Because I sent it to... You should have... I think I had the...
I'm going to go there right now.
I think I had the Pat Hawley email address that you...
Yeah, right. Okay.
There's a PDF that I sent with remaining tentative schedule for the modeling, and unless we have any other stakeholder comments, I can get right into that. Or unless Lee, unless there's any other.
Well, I would think I would ask for any other stakeholder comments. Make sure you don't have any.
Yeah.
We're done over here.
And then Lee, did you guys need to circle back around and address, or do we need? I'd like to have a list of final questions and remaining issues. We've got Sam's comment regarding documentation. Tony's regarding two different ways to look at the observed versus predicted. I think we have a lot of it documented. Maybe what I'll do is I'll just send that to you guys. You can add to that list and see if I missed anything. But
that sounds fine.
Okay. Well, with that, then I will.
Andrew.
Yes. Is that Sam?
This is Sam. Could we get Shaw to go ahead and send those two graphs that Tony asked far out?
Sure.
Just don't write anything. Just send them out so we can start looking at them.
Sure.
Yeah, the residual predicted versus observed over time and versus rainfall. Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll do that and get it to you ASAP.
I'd like a copy of that, too, if I could.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Could you pay me for that? Thank you.
Everybody, I'll send it to everybody. Okay.
Did you ask if there are any more stakeholder?
Yeah, I did. Are there any other stakeholder questions, comments?
Hearing none.
Okay. Yes, hearing none, I will go through the remaining task for the teleconference, which is the tentative schedule to wrap up the model peer review. Hold on one second. Well, we've got a question here that I'll ask the panel, because you guys mentioned documenting uncertainty with the model and the range of error in the model based on the sensitivity analysis. Do you guys have any more specific guidance regarding how you would like Shaw to do that? So that's the question.
My guidance is simply to explain. To me, it's a kind of a big picture discussion that goes into the heart of the fact that even though this model produces very specific numbers, there's uncertainty in the inputs and some of the relationships that leads to different outputs depending exactly on what you assume the inputs to be, and some concept of how much difference it makes and how we're going to use adaptive management to deal with it, as opposed to trying to capture it in some sort of MFL's regime. I think of it more as a big picture discussion.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, this is Sam. You know, I like the argument that Patrick made and that Shaw made about the cumulative impacts of, you know, lowered rainfall and so on that sensitivity analysis for rainfall. And I think that needs to be really well developed in the text, because just looking at the graph face value, it's pretty scary looking.
Okay.
And there is a good rational explanation for a lot of that behavior. So I really would recommend strongly discussing what your concept of the explanation for that behavior is.
Okay, got it.
And I guess that goes back to what I was getting at, which is I'm not very interested in the details of the graph, but the concept of the behavior. What is it?
Yeah.
What kind of behavior are we seeing, and what does that mean to us?
Especially regarding...
In other words, is this really error, or is this just an artifact of the way models work and the changes in storage and so on that go on because of a lowered rainfall event?
Okay. I'm getting that down. That's why the pause. Okay. Thank you.
Just chime in a bit here. Lee, you were worried about changes. There was quite a bit of pumpage coming out of the North Shore during 2001 was low. 2003 and 2002 and 2004 all had high pumpage from that North Shore area that now will have very little. So I don't know how that affects what you were saying, but...
Well, the bottom line is, the whole point of the sensitivity runs was not to learn anything about the system, okay?
Well, I did.
Or about the real world. It was to learn about the model.
I understand that, but it made me go back and look at what was actually happening, and I thank you for that, because it's critical to me that the water control systems are very critical in this system, and especially for Lake Apopka.
Well, there's no doubt that the realities and the changes over time are important, but again, for the sensitivity run, all we really wanted to learn was, is the model subject to giving us the wrong answer because of some fundamental assumption we made?
Well, if you're assuming that you're going to get all that discharge from this area and then you're not, it bears looking into.
Well, that might have been another sensitivity run. That would, you know, we could have contemplated that. I think that sixth sensitivity run was our attempt to find out how sensitive the model is to things in that north end,
yeah,
and it wasn't very sensitive at all.
Yeah, it was good. Thank you.
Okay. With that, I'm going to just, hopefully everybody got the PDF I sent with the remaining schedule. So if you look at where we are today, it's at the fourth item on the schedule, May 12th teleconference. I'm going to do the next item, which is between now and the 18th, and Shaw, and another item that's not on the schedule. Shaw's going to work on those two graphs, then we'll disseminate those two graphs. But then I'll be working on compiling this list of remaining questions and issues, and it'll be from both Workshop 1 as well as today. I'll get that out to everyone. I'll put it on the website, or I'll probably just send it to the listserv via email to get your comments on that, so that when Shaw is back in town, starting on the 20th of June, he'll be addressing all those questions. And so that's that first bold line is updating the calibrated model per all the comments, and then placing that model and the resolution document on the web. And that'll be by mid-August is what we're looking at right now. If it can happen sooner, great, and then everything will move up. And then basically the next time period is for everyone to review what he's put up there and send us anything else that you've got, any other comments. You'll notice that 8:15 to 8:26, Shaw, the line below that's in bold, he's going to be working on the baseline condition report as well. So it's already part of this report that we've been talking about, but there were comments in the first workshop regarding baseline. There have been comments here today regarding baseline. So he's going to spend that period of time working on the baseline. We're going to get that and place that on the website. And then people will have time to review that before workshop number 2, which will be in Maitland face-to-face, except Lee will be via phone, and that's when we're going to try to wrap up any final remaining details on the calibration model and report and get into more heavily the main focus of that second workshop. Will be a lot of the issues that Jim's been talking about is what should be part of this baseline condition. And so that's what will be happening early September, and then you can see what the rest of the schedule is. Basically, Lee is the panel chair, pulling everything together in a summary report, and then review of that report, and then us updating and trying to get everything onto the web end of September-ish is what we're looking at. And so that's the current plan. We do have one more action item that we need to add to things that we'll be getting for everyone, and that's the two items or the one item that OUC, that Keith and Debbie asked for, that schematic, or there's two schematics. So I don't know if, would you have time to do that before you head out, as well as the two graphs that Tony asked for, or would that come later?
Tony's, I think I can do it.
Tony's two graphs he can get to before he heads out.
He might be able to get that through the S staff.
The schematic of...
Yeah, they may be able to.
Oh, as far as how the North Shore is...
Yeah, because they're driving more than the operation.
He wants to know how it's been modeled, though.
Yeah, he really wanted what's in the model. We'll try to get that schematic to you sooner than later, but that may be part of what we give you after he's back. So I think, yeah, that's everything on the schedule. And Lee, unless you and if anyone else on the panel has anything else, I think that's everything I have, unless we've got any other final questions or comments.
Thank you, Andrew, for organizing everything.
Yeah.
I think we got done what we needed to get done.
Great. Oh, yes.
Yeah, this will be my last meeting with you all, and I'll be leaving the district June 30th, and I won't be involved with, I'll probably be talking to Andrew to see how things are going, because I'm close here.
He's on speed dial.
Yeah. But anyway, I've enjoyed working with all of you all, and, I'm going to miss it, I think. I'll have to wean myself off of this interaction, but anyway, leaving it in good hands.
We'll miss you, Sonny.
Yeah, miss you too. I'll see you out in your neck of the woods, Lee, is what I'm planning on.
Yeah, that's why you keep telling me that.
I was close not too long ago.
Okay.
All right, but anyway, you all take care, and I'll look forward to crossing paths with some of you.
Good luck, friend.
Sonny, hang in there.
All right, well, I think with that, we will adjourn. Thanks, everybody, for your participation.
All right, bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.